Let me just say this. I was very impressed, Simo, to see that within your estate agency team is a highly skilled and creative pumpkin carver.
Well, yes, it wasn't me, JP. It wasn't me. It was Sarah at Parker's in North Somerset. She was the skill of the pumpkin, and we had a really fun Halloween.
Pumpkin! Anyway, obviously, we're past Halloween. We're past that now. But anyway, I just want to reassure people that there is nothing nasty lurking in the basement, apart from your motorbike leathers, probably.
The Right Move.
The property podcast with
Andrew Simmons and JP.
Okay, when it's property, we're on your side. Just the best and most trusted takes on selling, buying, investing. All the house need to know stuff is here. Simo, we're going to go about as deep as it's possible to go into van life. Last time it was off-grid living. This time it's more geared towards, you know, moving around, but certainly, you know, being in a van for a long time. I'm going to hear from someone who is fanatical about it.
Yeah, it's great having Rebecca on, isn't it? She is fanatical, isn't she? They've done it before and they're off again. And this podcast, whilst it's property related, of course, van life is becoming a really big thing, even with families. And, you know, what we hear from Rebecca is, of course, that she's going to be able to work all around Europe because she can. Yeah. And great thing to hear about. And so, yeah, slightly off-piste from, you know, bricks and mortar, but within the realms of what we like talking about, isn't it?
It's absolutely. It's a cracking conversation. It's up soon. And Charlie, that's King Charles, by the way, not Charlie Lambdin, although there is a tie-in, because Charlie Lambdin is going to give the King's Speech on the 7th of November. That's when that happens. Run the rule over it, because part of it will be about leaseholding.
Yeah, and that's obviously something that I've got a lot of experience with, leasehold. And, you know, Charlie's got a really, really good few points to say, and we'll pick up on his views after Charlie says.
Also in the show, an update on where Alan is and his team with his self-build just behind his own pub, as it goes. And Simo, let's just put it out there now that we're not best pleased with On The Market.
Why are we not best pleased with them, JP?
Have they not sold out, would you say?
Well, you know, £100 million for selling on the market, not bad going. I'm a bit of a fan of On The Market, if I'm honest. I would say On The Market's last chance to really, really take the fight to Rightmove and the bigger portals. So, yeah, we'll chat about that a bit later on.
All right, will do.
Selling. Buying. Investing. Are you making the right move?
Let's push on our guest. Well, she's probably the ultimate free spirit, because her work is totally mobile and her life is one of the open road, Simo. So just tee it up for us.
Yeah, so Rebecca is, she left the UK in a van, or motorhome that I think her husband, Andrew, built practically from the ground up, obviously from a chassis. And they lived in that in around Europe. They then settled down, and I think probably she's got itchy feet, hasn't she, from being in four walls and a roof. So they've bought a new to them motorhome, and I think they're going to go knocking around doing their various jobs that they do remotely anyway. So fair play to them for what they can do, but something very different than bricks and mortar.
All right, let's do it.
Okay, so I'm Rebecca Hanlon. I'm a cytologist, so I have a platform online called The Dog Geeks. We go over health and well-being and behaviour and training, everything you can imagine. I'm a tutor for the Dog Genius Institute, and then my own business is Speak Dog Education with Rebecca Hanlon. So, and I live in Spain with my two dogs, my pet wild rat, and my husband.
I like, Rebecca, where the husband features in that pecking order. Even the rat got mentioned before.
Well, he knows it as well. But
obviously, we're going to have to, with all that talk of dog, we're going to have to come back to it shortly. But in terms of your plans, your travel plans, you know, what's about to happen? Because there's some there's some big stuff on the horizon.
There is. We've just bought a motorhome, and hopefully, if everything goes to plan, as of next summer, we will be travelling around Europe and living full time in our van. So we rent at the moment, so we'll be letting go totally of our rent. We don't know how long we're going to live in the van. Could be 6 months, could be a year, could be the rest of our lives. Who knows? But that's the plan at the moment. And we're going to be working online. And also I'll be doing, as I sort of briefly mentioned, some workshops around Europe as well. But thankfully I've got work online as well, which helps.
The layout of the van, have you had to do stuff to it, you know, with any modifications, or have you left it just as it was?
She's pretty much ready to go. My husband's tinkering at the moment. So she's a Hymer. Please don't ask me too much about her because I'm not good with engines and fakes and things like that. But I can definitely go into layout because that's sort of my more wide forte. So we've got a very small kitchen, which has got just a hob, so we've got no oven. A bathroom, so we can have a shower and go to the toilet and all that type of stuff. And there's actually two beds. So because it's a Hymer, you can pull the bed down at the front of the cab, which gives us two beds, which is great because the dogs are used to being on the bed. So the other bed, well, it'll probably be my husband in one bed, me in another bed, and the dogs rest. and then like a little dining room area. So it's very small. It's very compact. So yeah, not much storage space. So that's going to be our biggest challenge, I think.
But you're not entirely new to this, are you, Rebecca? So you've got experience, you know, is there stuff that you've learned in terms of the way you like layout to work or modifications, stuff like that? Things, because do I have it right? You basically did a previous van up, as it were, sort of like a renovation, a modification, that sort of stuff.
Yeah. So we bought a very old, I think she's about 30 years old now, Mercedes 310D. I know a little bit more about her because I'm more passionate about her. She's a beast. We lived and we travelled in around Europe in her with our previous three dogs. Sadly, none of them are with us now. But we did that for about a year, and we did live in her on and off as well, and worked in the UK, which was pretty difficult, to be honest, because it's very muddy in the UK. And my husband's a gardener, so trying to wash clothes and stuff like that when someone's gardening is not ideal. So we did that for a year and then on and off for sort of 5 years. And yeah, Andrew, before we came to Spain, Andrew modified her. So we totally ripped her apart because she was getting old. Her engine's fantastic, but her chassis and her chassis is great, but her structure was sort of failing. It had leaks over the years. And so he totally ripped it off down to the chassis and totally rebuilt her. But sadly, not to go into too much detail because I could be here forever. But sadly, he became very ill, and we still don't really know what went wrong. He's still kind of recovering now, but he couldn't work for 2 years. So he did the van up, but he had to do it in the pouring rain because we had a really bad bit of weather, and he had to do it when he was really, really ill. And eventually we drove her over to Spain with our dogs, and we lived in a field in her for about a year. And then we found our rented accommodation. And then sadly, we found out that we couldn't matriculate her. So that means we couldn't change her into Spanish plates. And because we are now Spanish residents, and because of Brexit, really, we're not allowed to drive a UK vehicle. So we realised that, yeah, we couldn't keep her. And because my husband had done a lot of the exterior when he was very ill, she started to get leaks again. So she's deteriorated quite a lot. We still have her. We can't let go of her. It's ridiculous, really, but we need to scrap her, to be honest. But there's a lot of emotional ties.
Yeah, I think people can relate to that. It's natural to get attached to a vehicle, especially when it's been a project.
Yeah, I mean, it's like with any house, isn't it? If you do really big renovations on a house, you know, you fall in love with a property, don't you? Well, yeah, not yeah. all of But, you know, you can, it's your home. And she was the same to us. She was our home for a long time. So we've definitely, and the nice thing was, is we could really make her our own. I suppose it's a bit of the same as between renting and owning, isn't it? That when you rent, it's really difficult to kind of put your stamp on the house. But whereas when you've got a mortgage and it's your own home, then you can really make it your own and work on it over the years. And that's kind of how we'd felt with her. And we had the layout, exactly the layout we wanted. So she had a massive kitchen. She just felt so spacious because Andrew designed her. You know, I don't know why more motorhomes are not designed like that, to be honest. But so it's going to be a real challenge because this one that we've got now is a bit of what we call a plastic fantastic. She's a bit of a model.
Yeah.
She'll probably run a lot better. We did run our old girl off of truffle oil once because we broke down because we ran out of fuel and we were like, right, so what oil is in cupboards? And I like my kid. So we put so many different oils in her. But it worked. It got us to the garage.
Yeah.
So the new one's going to be difficult because we can't put our stamp on her as much, because if we ever want to sell her, then if I start painting her in, you know, mad colours and things, then she's not going to be as sellable. And she has got a more difficult layout. I'd say it's there's not as much room in there as what there was in the last one. So that's going to be my biggest challenge, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like to me, I would say one of the biggest things from chatting to you, Rebecca, is that you're great champions of taking something that is on the older side, doing your thing and, you know, maintaining it, doing it up and stuff. Because, you know, you can spend crazy money, can't you, on new or nearly new motorhomes?
Yeah, you can. And this one, I mean, the new one we've got now, I mean, I'm very happy to say we spent 28,000. So we basically used a lot of our sort of inheritance and life savings from my husband's mum for her, because we were like, actually, if we're going to be in her a long time, for one, she will probably maintain a value for quite a while. She's not too old, but she's not, I mean, the new ones, you're looking at 65,000 upwards.
Yeah.
Often, you know, they're ridiculous. So there's as much as a house in Spain.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I'm sure we'll still be able to make her our own. But yeah, it's going to be a work in progress, I think.
You said there's no oven, but there's a hob. What kind of stuff do you tend to cook? Do you use, you know, the land around?
No, we didn't the last time. I mean, I had an oven the last time, so it'd be interesting this time. And we'll totally run off solar panels. The last time that we travelled, we didn't, I think we plugged in possibly twice. So that's into the electric, so not solar panel. But we did have a really good solar panel system on the last van. This one hasn't got as bigger one, and we can't actually fit our old system to it. It's too big. You have to ask my husband for the details on that. He can do all that for me. So no, I mean, most of our cooking probably will just be on the three-ring hob, to be honest.
Yeah.
Love cooking, and yeah, I can come up with loads of meals just working on the hob. So, but yeah, you definitely have to think of that. It's like storage of food, and you know, you do a weekly shop and but there's no way a normal weekly shop would fit in this van. So you have got to be quite inventive, really, with sort of the food you cook. And I also feed my dogs totally fresh diets. So that takes up a lot of space, yeah, as well.
What about the actual physical space, you know, for the dogs or, you know, of the dogs? I mean, how do they travel, Rebecca? I mean, I've got to say, I mean, we're not that we've done a motorhome in this family, but our rescue Staffy, she will do anything to avoid getting in the car to go 5-10 minutes. So I take it your dogs are okay?
No, one of them's not.
No.
So, yeah, so the last three dogs that we had, yeah, they just took to traveling like ducks to water. They absolutely loved it. I mean, neither of us were working. We took a year off when we were traveling. So we just, you know, we're just with the dogs day in, day out, which we will be this time because I work from home anyway. So, you know, and Andrew will be with them all the time. So they get that lovely one-to-one time. But no, Harry, one of our older dogs, he's always struggled with cars. And we'd finally got him okay with cars. He's been doing really, really well. We've managed to drive an hour recently and he was fine. And then we got him in the motorhome when we got it and he's absolutely terrified. So at the moment, what we're doing is we are literally driving 5 minutes up the road, going for lovely long walks with him every day, which is a bit of a nightmare because you're getting the massive motorhome out after we've both been at work all day, which, you know, is a bit of a, but hopefully it's exactly what we did with the car. We just did really little and often journeys so that it was all about going somewhere lovely for,
yeah,
him. It wasn't too stressful. So we're really hoping that builds up on it. And then we're going to start having just little sleepovers with them. My other boy, he's only 11 months and he's into everything. I mean, he's going to be more of a problem because of how bouncy he is.
Yeah.
At the moment, he's His most favourite thing at the moment is jumping on top of the dining room table and looking out the window, or going to sleep on it, actually. I found him asleep yesterday, yeah. So he's going to be a problem for different reasons. Space-wise, with the three dogs, we were amazed. My brother actually joined us for 2 months as well. So we had three of us living in the van with three dogs for 2 months in our old van, which everyone was like, how the hell did you manage that? But we all get on really well. So I think that's the main thing, really, that you've got to like each other's company quite a bit. And yeah, the dogs were great, to be honest. I mean, all the dogs sleep in our bed and, you know, so room-wise, we probably will only have one dog bed because most of the time they're either on the sofa chairs or, and as I said, we've got two beds, which is great. So as soon as we stop, we can pull the other bed down and it gives us a bit more space for them to kind of sit on. And most of our time we'll be out walking because that's our biggest passion really is, you know, mountain walking. So yeah, we'll be out walking a lot.
So what happens with the house rat in all these plans?
So Widget was found as a baby in the garden by my dogs. He's under a week old because he hadn't opened his eyes yet. He's a black rat. So he's not the same rat as we often get in the UK. They're almost extinct in the UK. So they're more tree rats. So they love climbing. It's a shame. If we were doing a video, you might be able to see him wander around in the background. Yeah, they rescued him and they're probably nearly 18. So I brought him indoors, got some friends to help me to look after this. I had to feed him every 2 hours, 24/7 for 2 weeks. It was exhausting. God, yeah. And I just thought he's going to die, to be honest. I thought at least he's in the warm. He's being loved as he died, you know, but he just kept going. Then he got pneumonia. He's very small for what he's meant to be. So the experts that I was talking to were like, he can't be released. He'll just die within a few weeks being released. I was like, oh, okay, so I have a pet wild rat now then. So I'm like, damn, what am I going to do? If they're not meant to be kept on their own either. They're meant to be kept in. So we have to spend a lot of time with him so he doesn't get depressed because he needs a lot of contact. At the moment, he's got free roam of my office because I don't really like having animals in cages and not really a big believer of it. He should be wild. We should be able to roam. So I'm like, at least he can have my office space. But that's not possible when we're going to travel. So he's going to be in his cage. I'm kind of getting him a bit like crate training with dogs. I'm getting him used to the cage. So he's very happy going in there for his food at the moment. He's starting to sleep in there. And he's going to live in our shower, basically.
Right.
So the cage will fit in the shower. And I'm harness training him at the moment. So my biggest thing is that I'm really hoping I can get him on a harness so he can go outside and he can get to explore a bit because otherwise he's going to be stuck in a cage, which is going to be horrible. But that's our biggest challenge. The dogs haven't even met him yet.
What's the dynamic? Do they all get on, but they've not even... Oh, right, okay.
No, it did when he was a baby. So he lived in my bra to keep him warm for 2 weeks. And they sniffed and they were fine with him then. But obviously he was very still then and he started to move around a lot. And he's actually sat on my shoulder at the moment. And so then I had to start being careful. And he was in the lounge for a bit in a cage. And one of my dogs, the youngest one, started going nuts at it. So I was like, okay, we've got to change this up. So yeah, that's how he ended up in my office and how he's ended up free roaming. They smell him off me all the time because obviously he crawls all over me. So I go out and make sure that they smell him a lot. They can hear him at night because he can be quite noisy at night. So I'm hoping they've kind of desensitized him quite slowly.
Yeah.
But yeah, we are going to have to, once he's properly in his cage and happy in there, we're going to introduce the dogs to him. But if you introduce dogs to anything like that, you're meant to kind of keep it very neutral. We don't really want them to look at him and fall in love with him. We kind of just want him to be very boring.
Right.
But so that training I'm putting in place at the moment is to just try and be as boring as possible.
Boring.
Which is difficult.
Boring.
He's not boring.
In terms of the way, you know, your work, the business sort of operates, but will people come to you then wherever you happen to be, stop, where, you know, where you're sort of parked up, et cetera? Is that... That all works in a fairly mobile way.
So I tutor other behaviourists and trainers online. So that's through the Dog Genius Institute. So that's all online work. That's online education based. And then I got the Dog Geeks, which is an online platform just people like you yourself, basically, just people with dogs that might want to do a bit of training or might have some behavioural issues, or might want to learn a bit more about nutrition, stuff like that. And then my in-person work is actually just workshops, which is actually not with dogs at all. It is just teaching people.
Right.
So different, it doesn't have to be trainers, but they're the people that have mostly got hold of me. So at the moment, I've got about 13 people that have got hold of me all across Europe, some in Spain, some in France, and then all across the UK. And they're going to host me in workshops. So they find a venue for me and I go and give a workshop, and the tickets will be sold to people that are, it's usually either other dog trainers or people that are very passionate about dogs, you know, really want to learn about dogs. So that's kind of going to guide us, really, which is quite nice because it kind of gives you a focus, because we did find when we traveled last time that you can start being like, oh, there's another castle, there's another mountain. So I think having projects and focuses, we're also thinking of, we'd like to stay as green as possible. And obviously being in a big vehicle is not very green. We are in many senses. It's probably still greener than being in a house if the house is not off-grid.
Sure.
You know, we're in a vehicle at the end of the day. So we thought we're going to try and do some beach cleans, possibly go to some nature reserves, help out maybe with rescue animals across Europe to kind of give back a bit as well. So we are planning, hopefully, if there's not time, to do that as well. So that's kind of our focus, really, is doing the workshop. So we'll go where people want me. We'll travel to them. Yeah, which would be great.
The perfect business model for it. And, you know, who knows, if you come across any more rats, you might have got a whole pack by the end of it.
I actually rescued three since Widget. So we have had three. Sadly, one came to me with pneumonia. He's very, very young and she died. The other two were fine and were released and happily went back into the wild. So that was really nice, actually, being able to release them. I would have loved to have released Widget. Not now, because I'm in love with him. He's like part of the family now.
Yeah.
It's not ideal, was it? I'd much rather him be running around with his own family, but he seems happy.
Yeah, you know, I'm sure he is. Where is it? And the language thing, are you fluent with Spanish and same with your husband, or you just sort of pick up things as you go around? How does that side of it work?
So we've lived in Spain for 3 years now. We've both been learning Spanish. My husband's, he's at a point where he can have conversations with people, and he's kind of growing off of that. He's done really, really well. My brain doesn't work. He's just got one of those brains that just soaks things up like a sponge. Mine hasn't. So coming here, it's been really hard because obviously we came here, we had to set up businesses, we had to find somewhere to live. So we've been really busy since we've been here. We came right at the sort of crux of the pandemic as well. Getting here was a real rush because Brexit has happened. So we had to get here quicker than we anticipated, because otherwise the requirements to live here now have gone, it's a lot harder to get residency here now. So we needed to get in before that all happened. So it's been a really manic 3 years, to be honest. It's a really big excuse to say that my Spanish is really shit. I'm still learning. I can do restaurant speak. I can make myself known in a shop and things. I can have little chats about stuff, but not much. But I feel like I'm always improving, and that kind of, I think, as I'm always improving, then I'm going in the right direction. But yeah, my Spanish is awful. Yeah.
Well, I think in fairness, Rebecca, you know, restaurant speak is the yardstick for most people when it comes to language. If you can get your two draft beers, please, then everyone's happy, aren't they?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Thanks for giving us some time, Rebecca. It's been great having you on, and good luck with all the travels.
Well, thank you. It's been a real pleasure.
Yeah, thanks, Rebecca. It's a mindset, isn't it? I mean, there's full commitment to that idea of just rolling with it, you know, not worrying about stacks of possessions, designer, this and that. It's a very freeing experience.
Yeah, definitely. And if you can do it, I think it's probably very rewarding because you get to see loads of different places. You don't open the curtains in the morning and stare at the same fence or the same tree or the same neighbors over the road.
Yeah.
And that's something to be said for it. I do like the idea of spending, and as you know, we have our own motorhome and we try and spend a fair bit of time in it to travel. And certainly for our holidays, you know, getting away and doing it. I don't think I could do it permanently.
Yeah.
If the truth be told. But yeah, I think it's a there's a lot, and that's why I wanted to bring this to our podcast. It was all about a part of life now that people are living this way.
Sure.
And having the opportunity to, I think with the way that the internet has evolved and people are able to work so much more remotely and take their work with them, it's a great way to see the world.
Yeah, well, you might pull back the curtain and see the same house rat, in fairness. Yeah. Now, the it's The Right Move, the leading property podcast. The King's Speech, I mean, the real, on 7th of November, the real King's Speech with King Charles, of course, setting out what's to come in government, in Parliament. Charlie Lambdin is going to be on in a sec and to talk about, you know, what it all means, particularly for leasehold. So you got some stuff to say about this, but we'll get into it first, yeah?
Yeah, let's hear from Charlie first.
Charlie says. So, the leasehold reforms being proposed for the King's Speech are potentially very exciting if they are enacted. There seems to be a real political will to get them enacted, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they will get through. And I have a worrying feeling that with the best will in the world, this legislation is going to get stuck in the long grass. Having said that, they've paved the way with legislation brought in about a year ago. So there is a healthier or better chance than we've had recently of seeing this happen. Now, what are the changes? They're really quite exciting changes, which are really very good for people who own leaseholds, really quite punitive for owners of the freeholds that the leaseholds are under. So in a nutshell, ground rents are going to be effectively abolished, which will be a small but not insignificant saving for leaseholders. Some of their ground rents have actually gone up quite high. Control over common parts and maintenance is going to be made easier. The law already exists to do that, but it's very difficult to actually implement those rights as a leaseholder. But most importantly of all, marriage value is going to be abolished, which is when the freeholder gets to keep half of the uplift in value of extending the lease. That's being abolished as well. And finally, at the moment, you are entitled to extend a lease if it's less than 99 years. You're entitled to extend it by 90 years. But that still means it's a depreciating asset. And they're changing that so that if you're extending your lease, you can extend it to 999 years, which to all intents and purposes means that you effectively don't have an asset that's depreciating quite quickly over the space of a couple of decades. It is definitely interesting that this is being pushed through. I wonder, perhaps cynically, whether a lot of the largest landowners and property owners who are starting to lose from this would rather the legislation got pushed through under a Tory government than wait and see what a Labour government might do with it, where it could be much more damaging for those landowners. So that's my take on it. Some definitely brilliant changes proposed. Let's keep our fingers crossed that they actually happen.
That's how Charlie sees it. I have three words to say to you. Right to manage.
Well, yes. Now, as Charlie said in his piece there, that it's becoming more difficult for people to take control of their property. That's, I have to say, that isn't that true in a sense. Not that it can't be difficult, because you can have lots of hoops to go through, but the right to manage legislation is something that, you know, was brought in quite a few years ago now. I want to say something like 2005. It was quite a while ago. Maybe I'm wrong with the date, but you know, certainly a long time ago. And the right to manage process means that you need the support of 50% of the leaseholders within a leasehold environment, who can then set up what's known as a right to manage company. And the right to manage company will take over the management. Now, it can take a bit of time, but essentially the right to manage company, it is a right. It's not something that they can lose by. So freeholders have to go through a legal process, and they have to, or they will generally delay things. And, you know, there's a lot of delaying tactics because they don't really want to lose the right to manage. The freeholder doesn't want to lose their right to manage, but it does make life a lot easier. And then you can appoint whoever you want as you know, a management company. You can appoint an agent to look after it, or you can do it yourself if you've got the skill set. But that has been, up to now, a very good way of taking control of leasehold property. Now, of course, that side of things is fairly, it's known within the industry. It's not known widely. People do still feel trapped because they think, oh, we need to get 50%. And if you've got a block of flats, let's say, that have got 300 units within them, you've got to get 150 to, as a minimum. And how do you do that? Do you go through the land registry to get people's details? Because many of them can be let. You knock on the door, find out who the landlord is. You know, that takes time as well. So I'm not saying that Charlie's wrong. So please don't take that way. It's just that actually the right to manage is a very, is a process that a freeholder cannot win and a leaseholder cannot lose. So yeah, so I would say there is some, but the good thing is, as Charlie said, there are these things coming in which are going to benefit leasehold, and essentially we'll get to the point where leasehold will have, you know, we'll find another place in history. The thing that I have to stress is that the where this has come from is more with regard to leasehold housing, not leasehold flats, because you still need someone to insure the building, or you need to pay your share of a building's insurance and also maintenance and upkeep. This is more so the leasehold properties where you've got ground rents, that is more of a problem. But over the years, you know, and I'm seeing it now with leasehold houses, or sorry, houses that have a ground rent to pay. Most freeholders are very distant. They were probably the builders, and they've long since left this earth. And you know, I dealt with one recently where it was a 1960s house, early 70s house, that had a ground rent of something like £5 a year on it, but the lender on the for the buyer wouldn't lend against a house that had a ground rent. So in the end, the ground rent was bought out, not by much, by the vendor, and it progressed through. So this is happening quite regularly anyway, but what the legislation will do, as Charlie's saying, is it will help things, and it will be a very good thing for the leasehold sector.
Okay, I'll get it. You're not, like you say, you're not contradicting Charlie, just sort of, I suppose, adding flesh to the bones. You know, it's not as if you're going full Russell Quirk.
Certainly not going full Russell Quirk or even Christopher Watkin. But there we are.
Okay, before we get our quick update on Alan's self-build and something else that we're going to be talking about in a sec, I just want to look at this on the market sale story, because, you know, all right, to the untrained eye, if you like, the kind of property Luddite more like me than you, you know, if you're in the housing market, you're obviously going to be aware of your right moves, those sort of portals, and obviously on the market. Now, on the market has been flogged, hasn't it? It's been sold. I mean, is this one of those things that will have an effect on the public, do you think? And why have they done it? Is it the obvious? Is it just money?
I don't know, is the honest answer. I think it's a huge deal. They've been bought by a property data firm, CoStar. They've got offices in 15 countries around the world, and they obviously want to you know, promote or push. I mean, there's going to be a reason. You know, the data that comes out of property listings is massive, and to get that data and to be able to do whatever they might do, I mean, it's well beyond my knowledge and understanding of what people do with data. But the global group, CoStar, is worth about £33 billion, pounds, I believe. So 100 million is a slight drop in the ocean. But what they're planning to do is to make on the market the key place to go in UK portals.
Yeah.
Now, as an agent, I actually like on the market. I think, you know, they've certainly got far better from dealing with me as a business. So for example, my account manager has been there for a number of years, not my account manager with Rightmove, who's been there a number of weeks.
Yeah.
And constantly changing. I think I've probably had 6 or 7 account managers with Rightmove in the last 2 years. And that just proves that they are, you know, Rightmove, it's all about, they're all after the money. And my on the market, the cost of my on the market subscription, for example, is the increase of my Rightmove subscription this year. So to give you an idea, that's what, you know, I pay as an agent. I pay on the market a very, I wouldn't say it's reasonable, I would say it's a fair price for what I get as a from a portal. What I think, and I've been quite honest with my account manager on the market, is they do have lots of good little add-ons for agents to use. And actually those little add-ons become very useful for the public. You know, it's really hard because I'm going to say it, JP. Mm-hmm. We have tried to get Jason Tebb, the CEO of On The Market, onto the podcast for a chat, because I am a very big advocate of On The Market as a portal. Sadly, he has declined to come on. I'm not sure quite why, but anyway, maybe we'll get him on at some point. But I think On The Market has got such good opportunity, or such a good opportunity now, to overtake Rightmove potentially by investing in the marketing. I think that we do need a contender like that. Zoopla has never become that contender. In fact, I've cancelled my Zoopla subscriptions because, you know, frankly, I get next to no leads through from Zoopla. And again, I've been very honest with them about that. But with, you know, portals are a little bit of a bane of an agent's life. But if they've got good quality behind them, they're going to be worth it for the long run. And I think On The Market can be that. I don't know if you remember, On The Market, when they launched a number of years back, they went out with a big marketing campaign that said, we're going to be... the people that list with On The Market are going to list 24 hours before any other portal.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Now, that slipped by, and everybody lists. If they list on the market, if they list with Zoopla, if they list with Rightmove, the software will ping everything out. The feeds will go to those portals at the same time. Mm. You've heard it from me here first.
Go on.
If On The Market only stuck with that business model and said, we will be on out there before everybody else 24 hours, then I can tell you now, every single agent in the country would want to be on the market.
Yeah.
Because they would have to subscribe to say, we will do this, and they'd agree to do it. But it wouldn't half make On The Market valuable, because people would be going to On The Market as a consumer first, because if they know that On The Market has the listings before any other portal, then that's where they're going to look, and they're going to start looking. And Rightmove will just become a fad, and it'll go. This acquisition by someone, you know, or a business that has a huge, huge amount of financial backing and clout has got to do something like that to get the marketing out. You know, look at Boomin. You know, sadly, Boomin, you know, I say sadly, you know, Boomin was, it had great opportunity to become a good contender, a really strong contender. But I think Boomin didn't really know what it wanted to be. And it lasted 10 minutes.
Yeah, yeah.
On The Market has shown the test of time, but it needs marketing budget chucked at it in spades.
Yeah.
Let's watch this space. Let's see what happens. Yeah. I think, you know, we've got a very good opportunity to get it out there. And, you know, maybe Jason would like to come on and have a chat about it. And, you know, I honestly can say that he would be very welcome to come and plug the benefits of our listeners and generally the consumers using On The Market to find their next home.
Well, it's certainly got damn good plug so far for On The Market. I think we should invoice the guy On Spotify.
£100 million.
Yeah, too right. And a short change. We're on Spotify, Google Podcasts, and Apple Podcasts. The whole podcasting shebang. This is The Right Move. Now, we've been following Alan's self-build progress behind the pub that he owns. And they've, as you heard last time, struck lucky with some free stone on Facebook Marketplace. Let's catch up with Al.
Quick update on what's now going to be known as Silver Birch Barn. We're up to just over the 5 foot level with the lovely stonework and brickwork all the way around the property. And last week the scaffolding went up, which is really quite exciting because you get to, well, probably not supposed to, but nobody was around. So I climbed up the scaffolding, had a wander around and looked down into the rooms, and it gives you a different perspective on it rather than just walking around. It's quite interesting. It makes it, you know, the size become more apparent. Had a meeting with the plumbers yesterday and discussed the heating arrangements and this manifold thing that all the separate sections and thermostats have got to go into. And we discussed solar panels and things like that, but I think that's going to have to wait because that's not actually in the budget at this current moment in time. Also agreed on our windows and doors. We are allowed powder coated aluminium doors and windows, and we've opted for a bifold door on the opening at the back. Can't remember how long that is. It's about 5-6 meters. So work's been held up a couple of days this week with this Storm Kira, or whatever she were called this time. We managed to avoid the brunt of it, but it still wasn't good weather for laying stone. It also might be worth mentioning measuring things like internal walls. We've got a utility room obviously next to the kitchen, and me and the builder measured it 4 or 5 times. Because obviously you want more kitchen than you want utility room, but then the utility room's got to be wide enough to walk down. So I think we measured it about 9 times before we all agreed where it was going to put the walls, etc. So yeah, it's the old adage, measure it twice and cut it once, or whatever it is. But yeah, it's well worth measuring and measuring and measuring and walking around and just double checking, because at this stage a wall in the wrong place is going to be a big mistake.
You're with The Right Move. Subscribe to us now on all major podcast apps.
Well, let's end on a positive. The Guild of Property Professionals, Simo, you know them well. They've been on this podcast and they've just won the Best Agency Network Award for the third consecutive year. A trio of these awards in a row. How good are they?
Yeah, well, it's brilliant news. And as you know, I'm a Guild member, and you know, I'm very, very proud to be a Guild member. And we had Ian on, didn't we, the CEO, probably 6 months ago now, talking about what Guild members can do in the various communities. It's a great achievement, you know. Best Agency Network, again, 3 years running, as you said. So we've got Best Agency Network Award. We've also had the Supplier Award for Best in Sector. It's just fantastic. And the Guild is a great network for us to be part of. You know, we're part of another network as well, the Experts in Property, but the Guild gives us that national reach. And I think it's so good that it just consistently getting these awards. So yeah. Great round of applause to Ian and the team at the Guild. They clearly had a good night looking at the photos. Maybe Ian will invite me next time. I don't know. Let's see.
Hinted. Very subtle, Simo. Very subtle indeed. Let's look to our next episode very briefly here at the end, because the podcast is entering the world of daytime TV stardom.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Well, it's going to be great. We're going to have a daytime TV interior designer on next. And so really looking forward to that. It will be great to hear about interior, you know, what to do with your house and how to set it up and what works, what doesn't work, and hear it straight from someone. And also, I think she's going to have a chat to us about her own property and what she's done there.
Yeah, there's sort of nothing off limits. She's great. She's very, very enthusiastic, knows her stuff, and just has got, you know, so many accessible tips. Not one of these that says, oh, you've got to go out and buy a roll of wallpaper that costs you £75 a roll a pop. So yeah, she's just very good with all that sort of thing. All sorts of budgets, all sorts of tastes, and she is very clued up. I won't say who it is, but say big name off the daytime telly shows, and we'll have that next time. She will be with us, Simo. Until then, adieu.
10-4, JP.